history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that really need to be told. And we want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And when we do that, we learn a lot. We're educated, we're entertained, and so often we're inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. Now, that book, The Greatest Generation, is on the table right over there. Tom Brokaw's classic about our World War II vets, and we're with a World War II Marine today in Albuquerque, New Mexico, Leopoldo Griego, 95 years old, and you've lived here in the Duke City pretty much all your life?
Yes, I was born in then the Villa de los Rancho, they call it. I was born where Pueblo Road is and 4th Street. There's a beautiful house across the street, and that's where I was born. It's only about 3 miles from here where I live.
Uh-huh.
So born and raised, and I went to the CC camp. I still got a picture I'm going to show you when I went this. You remember the CC camp?
Oh, yeah, I've heard a lot about them. Oh. Well, before, you had to be a teenager for that, though. I want to hear about the early days. I mean, the 20s and the early 30s, going through the Great Depression. What was this place like? What was your life in Albuquerque like way back then?
We had a big ranch right uh-huh. there. My mom and dad, we had a lot of property. So we didn't feel the depression. So the government, the president, I don't know who the president was. Was it Abraham Lincoln? No.
You're not that old, Leo.
Anyway, the president made this for the young, like me, that I didn't want to go. I only went to the 8th grade. I got my CED later on. But I went on. Was young. They came with the CC camp. We had uniforms that we used to do, just like if you was in the service. That helped me a lot. For the Marines.
Well, which one did they send you? So this is the Civilian Conservation Corps.
Yes.
And there were several of these camps around
all
New
over.
Mexico and all over the country.
Yeah.
So which one did you go to?
The one that I was thinking, because I was kind of born here though at that time. Edis was the end of this growth, and from there it was all desert. But anyway, I think the camp was the Army National Guard. Uh-huh. You know, that's on Central and Wyoming, I think it is.
So this was right in Albuquerque, in
yes.
the city.
Yes. So, okay. So I was only maybe a year at that, because they used to pay us, I think, $40 a month. You keep $5, and the $40 you give to your parents. But my parents, they were living on the farm. We didn't, but he didn't even need it. But he would take the $40 and I, $5, 15 cents a beer. Man, you can go, you can drink all you want to. So we had a good time. I enjoy that. I enjoy being there. It kind of prepared me to when I went to the Marine, because I left home, you know. Yeah. I can still remember going to the Marine when I was 18 years old. There was a lot of young guys that, boy, you ought to see how many were going in at that time. They were all 17, 16 years old. My friend was 16 years old. And you can hear them sometimes kind of crying at night because they're not home no more with the grandmother or the mother. But me, I was so used to with the CC camp, so I was ready for the mm-hmm. Marine.
So how old were you when you went to the camp?
I must have been about 15, 16 years old at that time.
And what did they have you guys doing?
We do forest fires, which were very small, and we do kind of little dams where the arroyos come down and everything. It was heavy work, mm-hmm. but I got smart. I decided, hey, I want to work on the kitchen, and that way I don't have to be doing all that heavy work that they did it. And I enjoyed that we wear uniforms for the officers to feed them, and that was our job, do their beds, the cleanup. And I didn't have to be working like the other guys. And I did that for 2 years, and I enjoyed it very much. I had a very good friend that was with me, and we used to come and dance in Albuquerque like that. And I always wonder what happened to that friend of mine. But the war started, and then they closed it. They closed that because the war started, you know.
Yeah, they needed those young men in uniform,
yes.
Military-wise. Speaking of the war starting, I always like to ask every veteran this because it seems like most of them have a memory. December 7th, 1941.
Yeah.
Do you remember where you were and how you heard about the attack on Pearl Harbor?
I kind of remember like a dream that I was walking down Central near the Presbyterian Hospital. And here comes this young guy, you know, selling me extra, extra, war started, you know, extra, air Japanese attack in Pearl Harbor, you know. And that's when I find out about the war. But I start working at the base, and their bar, cleaning glasses and things like that.
Kirtland Base. Army Air Force Base back then.
Army, yeah. Exactly.
Right.
And I met an actor that was training there by that time when the war started, Jimmy Stewart. I didn't know actors, so later on I found out it was Jimmy Stewart. He used to sit out there by himself in a corner out there, drink a little beer or something, cheese and crackers, and I used to go take him like that. Later on, I found it was Jimmy Stewart that he even talked to me, maybe not very little, you know. Well, and he went through war and what, made a general?
A lot of people don't know he actually flew bombing missions in World War II.
Exactly.
But he was just another guy at the bar.
At the bar. Well, but when I joined the Marine Corps, we used to go loaded on a bus, 15, 20 of us guys, and they made a couple of tunes out of that. When you get a platoon, there's a whole bunch of Marines already that have gone through a training. And they had a saying. Every time they come a bus there, they had a saying, "You'll be sorry." So they was our turn to say to the other people that, like that. But that's the saying. And it's been known that that's what they used to say. "You'll be sorry."
I've heard that. Yeah.
But then I met another actor there. He came right after the second platoon of me, Tyrone Power.
Uh-huh.
He was there. So after doing all this exercise and everything in the evening when we're just taking it easy now, getting ready to go to bed, we get around him and he would tell stories. And I like to hear him talk because he had a beautiful voice, you know, and talk like that. But there was a guy from New York, kind of tall guy, and they didn't like the way we were going after him. Kind of jealous. So he started telling him stories about his life, you know. And everybody knew it, but he kept put it to the side, let him go. But then he started talking about his wife. There was a movie actress. He said, "That's enough. You can say about me all you want to, but you're not going to talk to my wife about that." Mm-hmm. And he jumps in. What we do, we spread him, call the sergeant, pick the boxing gloves. Okay, go at it. Tyrone Power knocked the hell out of him. We were so we were so glad, and the guy, he admitted and apologized.
How about that? Yeah.
So yeah. Those are the two actors that I met during the war. Well, with Bob Hope, I met him over there overseas. He was very nice.
Well, what about your decision to join the Marine Corps? What was it about the Marine Corps that attracted you?
I had a friend. He was 1 year older than me and was actually 1 year younger than my brother, but they was my brother's best friend. Nice looking guy. He had problems at home. He ran away from home just a little bit before the war. He joined the Marine also before the war. When he went back on furlough, hit with a uniform, with a Marine uniform, and all them girls going after him, "Hey, I want to join the Marine Corps." And he went through a couple of islands too, and then he went to Iwo Jima. He got killed there.
Oh, my goodness.
And I got his story right there, if you ever want to read the story. Alex Gonzalez used to live right. He was my neighbor, 2-3 houses from where I live.
Alex Gonzalez.
Alex Gonzalez was his name.
So he was the inspiration for you becoming a Marine.
Exactly.
Well, I want to come back around to that when you found out what happened to him.
Okay, but now I'm going to, a lot of people, you ask, how long did you go to the service, they asked me. Did you enlist or did you go for 4 years or what? I don't know if you ever heard it before. The way I went into the Marine Corps during the duration of war. Have you heard that one before?
Sure, yeah.
During duration of war, that's the way I signed. I only seen one guy that done that before. You don't see that many. They're all either volunteers or they went for 4 years or something. So I was wounded, and I was sent back to the States in Maryland as a guard there in Maryland on that submarine filling station. And the war was still on. I don't know how long I was there. And then the war ended. Sergeant came over with the paper, and he said, "You got to sign this." "What is that?" "Well, during the duration of war, now the war's over, now you got to go 4 years to the Marine Corps." And I said, I'm going home.
So they wanted you to reenlist.
Yeah,
right,
he wanted me to reenlist. Because in the first place, as much as I went fighting and made it this good sergeant, went through hell with a lot of sergeants. We got ambushed in New Britain, Cape Alaska, 2 months in the jungles. Man, we had rain. We got ambushed twice and everything, went through hell. And then over there, and yet I couldn't get a rank. I ended up PSC. And the reason I got mad with my sergeant because discrimination. I was the only Spanish guy. And I told him, he said, there was a place for two corporals. And he gave it to replacement that had gone, he gave it to them instead of me and then me fighting alongside with him, and he gave it to him. Mm-hmm. Boy, I went after him. I told him, I really told him off. I said, how can you do this to me? I should have one of those. He said, really? You're going home. This guy said they're going to go fight with a group to Okinawa. And I got a funny feeling that the platoon, I heard, I don't know how true it is, that they got all killed. So maybe that's what saved me, you know, the wound sent me home already.
Well, and I want to get to that, and you're giving us kind of a sneak preview of some of the things we're going to hear about Cape Gloucester, about Peleliu, where you were wounded, and more. But when you first went into the Marine Corps, was it what you thought it was going to be? Was it more difficult? How did they turn you into a Marine?
Well, being young at 18, you know, I call myself pretty strong. I remember they used to go to this big swimming pool and they put line us up four, five, six or whatever. And they said, can you swim? And you said, yeah, okay. And they go, can you swim? No. Push him in there and there, was, and then we had to pull him out. Uh-huh. Me, I was born here and I used to go to that river. We had cattle. I used to go out there when I was a little kid to take care of my cattle in the mountain. From Rio Grande Road to the river, it was all forest. So we used to go swimming there. And I keep calling it as a joke. I keep calling, we were just little kids. We were skinny dip. We didn't know nothing about bathing suits. No, there were no houses. Nobody was close by. So we enjoyed. So I was a good swimmer.
Uh-huh.
In fact, me and another guy, we raced just to see who would beat. We both even. Sometimes he beat him, sometimes beat him. But the other one, they couldn't even swim. So that's why I had it. And so after that training that I had on boot training in Camp Pendleton, uh-huh, I still got the picture there of the group and the number of the group that I got there when I was a Marine and boot training.
Oh, I can't wait to see your baby face on there. Yeah. We'll put that up at hometownheroesradio.com.
I had a hell of a time finding myself because you know, I changed and we all look alike. But anyway, so going to the Marines like that, I only shot one time when I was a little kid. My dad went downtown and I stole his shotgun and got on top of my horse. And I was a very proud little kid, you know, with a shotgun. So there was a little can out there. I went and got the shotgun from the top of the horse. Boom! Man, I fell down the horse. Couldn't find him for a week.
You scared him, huh?
Get the hell out of here. But anyway, so when I joined the Marines, I'm going to make sure. So I made sharpshooter. I got this little beautiful medal that I got as a sharpshooter. I found out I was a big mistake. Guess where they put sharpshooters?
Uh-huh.
In the front.
That's right.
There were three of us sharpshooters, myself and this Indian from Oklahoma, and I don't forgot where the other ones got. We changed like that, but it was not my turn. They both got killed.
But wow.
Because we were in front all the time, you know. I did catch one Japanese. I was about to almost kill a Japanese, but we needed Japanese for more information, you know. So they told us, if we can get him before you kill him, so I got a Japanese.
Captured him.
But he was looking the other way, and when I went behind him, when I heard a noise, and I went like this, and everybody stopped, you know. And then I signaled to the lieutenant that I think there's a Japanese in a little. It was not a shed. They left him there, this Japanese, and he had his back to me. When the Marines went like this, and then he told me to go ahead. And I got maybe about 30, 40 feet from him, and then I hollered at him. And he had his hands like this, and when I hollered, he turned around and looked at me, but this hand was kind of hidden from the thing that he was there, you know. And I said, I ain't going to take no chance. I was going to kill him. And then he went like this, you know.
Waved both hands around so you
could
see
him. Yeah,
uh-huh.
And then I found out that he had a problem with his feet. I don't know why they didn't kill him, so they left him like that. So we got him. He was so glad we got him, you know.
This was on Peleliu?
No, this was in New Britain.
New Britain.
New Britain, Cape Gloucester.
Well, and even before that, so you go through your training at Camp Pendleton, and they sent you overseas pretty quickly.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
Your first stop was Guadalcanal?
Yeah, well, when you put training, then they send you to different places. Guess what they sent me? They sent me to a paratrooper. And, well, I went out there, and I was trained. as a paratrooper.
Was that in New Jersey, Lakehurst?
No, that's at Camp Pendleton, Camp Elliott. So I went there, and I'd never been in an airplane close by. So they took us in the airplane, you know, with those two propeller, the P-47, whatever. And then you're supposed to look down, but not to jump. Gee, I see the little cars over there, you know, like they look like little things. I ain't going to, I don't want you to jump out of here. And I wasn't the only one. So I said that most of us, not 50%, most of us, we didn't pass. They gave you a test, a very short little test. They already went through the whole training. I knew how to pack a parachute very good. And the only way you can get away from it, either you fight with the sergeant, the trainee, or don't pass this test. 50% of it in passes that we didn't want to continue. we didn't want to be paratroopers. Some guys, boy, they want it because you do get the stars like a pilot. You
know? And you get extra pay.
Yeah. So, no, I didn't want to be fighting up there in the Japanese. So that's when I went to the infantry. And I went straight to Australia. And the first Marine Division, they just coming in when I was stationed there. And here come this Marines fighting from Guadalcanal. I didn't fight in Guadalcanal, but you ought to see the story they told me. I said, my God, what did I get into? You know, the way they fought there in Guadalcanal, they went through hell. But I did go to Guadalcanal for training. The Japanese were leaving, so I still got the medal, the ribbon that I
the
was
there. The campaign ribbon for Guadalcanal.
The campaign ribbon that I was there, but I can't say that I fought it. Uh-huh. But after there, I went to New Guinea, went through the jungles. We didn't find no Japanese in New Guinea. And then we went to New Britain, mm-hmm. Cape Horaster.
A battle you never hear too much about, but you will when we come back. Leo Griego, 95 years old, of Albuquerque, New Mexico, is our guest today. Find photos and a brief video of Leo online at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And we'll be right back after this.